Hello, creative people. Welcome to Creative Conversations. My name is Hollis Citron, and we are so happy that you have chosen to spend this hour with us. So I am owner and founder of I Am Creative and Express Yourself Publishing, and I am on a mission to expand the definition of creativity beyond a pencil and a paintbrush and empower people, especially adults, to own their voice that come in so many different forms. So this space was created to talk with people with all different jobs, hobbies, and interests, and have conversations about experiences and perspectives, all centered around three questions. One, how do you define creativity? Two, how do you incorporate it into your life? And three, why do you think it's important? Then we have a free-flowing conversation, and we see where it goes. So I have had the opportunity to talk to musicians, Reiki masters, mediums, doctor, lawyer, real estate agents, and so many more. And these conversations explore the reality that creativity is not cute, it is necessary. People have defined creativity as their soul's essence, courage, imagination, basically all that we are and want to be. So sharing these stories expands one's thinking and opens up self-expression to feel more empowered, connected, and dare I say, happy. My inspiring guest for today is Sarah Baumgartner. Sarah is a fine artist and co-founder of Well Wander Wellness and Adventure Retreats for Women in Bar Harbor, Maine. Sarah is a process-driven mixed media artist that uses mindfulness practices and humble materials in her work. Her intention is to create awareness on the importance of being present and connecting with our environment, ourselves, and each other. Sarah, welcome to the space.
Good morning. Hi, Hollis.
Hey, Sarah. Good morning.
Hi. Good morning. How are you?
I am very well, thank you. How are you?
I'm doing great. I'm really excited to talk to you today.
I am excited too. So after reading just that little bit about you, can you please tell us just a little bit more about yourself?
Sure. I grew up in Northern Virginia in the metropolitan DC area in Fairfax. And I went to Virginia Tech for my bachelor's degree. I did a Bachelor of Arts in painting and ceramics. So those were my concentrations. I did functional wheel thrown ceramics and abstract painting mostly. And then I did an exchange program in Florida, a national student exchange program. So I did my senior year in Pensacola at the University of West Florida. And but I still graduated from Virginia Tech. So after I graduated, I stayed in Florida and worked for an art gallery for a few years, and then met a gallery owner who was moving to Savannah, Georgia to open another art gallery there, and he wanted me to go work for him. So I moved to Savannah, and around that time I was thinking about going to grad school. So I realized I ended up in the right place for that. So I applied to SCAD. I looked at a few other schools, but SCAD really felt like the right fit for me, and got in, and I started in the painting program there. But I started doing more sculptural things, more tactile things. I taught myself how to felt. I was using rust and metal in my work. I was doing more three-dimensional things instead of actually painting. So I was in a printmaking class there and met a couple of other students who were in the fibers department. And they were telling me about what they did over there. And I was like, oh, that's where I belong. They're like, yeah, I think you're a fibers person. So I talked to the chair of that department and ended up transferring as a graduate student, which isn't super common, but I really felt like the things they were doing over there aligned with what I wanted to do. And I wanted to learn other processes and techniques that I could do in that department. So after I finished my coursework there, I worked for SCAD for several years, recruiting students. And so I traveled mostly in South Florida and Puerto Rico and gave presentations and talked to students and looked at their portfolios and encouraged them to follow their passions and follow their dreams, and that they could do that, you know, that it was possible. So after a few years of doing that, travel sounds glamorous, but you can get burned out pretty quickly. So I took a job as a sales rep for a publisher. I lived in Savannah for a few more years. So in total, I lived in Savannah for about 11 years. And then I moved to Atlanta to work for another publisher. And so I didn't have to travel as much. So I lived in Atlanta for about 4 years, which was a difficult period of my life, but a necessary one. And I learned a lot and grew a lot while I was there. I actually got sober there, which is actually a big part of my story. Well, not, I mean, you know, it's a part of my story. And then I had this dream. I had this vision for many years, for like the past 6 years, I had this dream of starting retreats for women and doing creative things and mindful things and meditation and yoga and talking about healthy eating and doing, you know, art. So I held this vision for a long time, and I have come up to Bar Harbor, Maine since I was 16 with my best friend from high school. And I came up the past couple of years, and I came up to work remotely during the summer last year because everything was pretty locked down due to COVID-19. And we decided we wanted to start something new together. So I listened to my intuition. I decided I was going to make that leap, and I left my corporate job. My best friend and business partner and her husband bought an inn so that we could run retreats out of the inn, and I'm managing the inn. And we've been running the inn all summer, and we're starting our first retreats at the end of October. And then we'll continue it next season, starting in May.
So freaking exciting.
so that's the synopsis. I hope I touched on a little bit of everything.
Well, you know what? We're going to dive more into it in the actual, you know, as we go in, but it was a very good outline. And oh my gosh, listening to your intuition, I mean, it just goes to prove you hold a vision. We never know how long it's going to take. It could take a day. It could take an hour. It could take 10 years. Like, we don't know. But it's the process of holding that, staying true to it, and yeah, it manifests. Well,
yes,
you created it.
It's incredible. Yeah, it's incredible. I'm a manifester for sure. I feel like I'm a pretty powerful manifester, and there have been examples throughout my life where I feel like I have the intuition or I have the desire for something. I hold the vision, and then I see it. But it also takes noticing the synchronicities, kind of noticing where the universe is showing up for you, and feeling gratitude for that. And things just keep flowing in that way. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh my gosh. Okay. So this is going to be good. So okay. I want to welcome the people that are here live. Thank you so much for being here. We appreciate you. Any questions or comments, please feel free to put them in the chat box where we will see them. So going to start off with a would you rather question, Sarah. So, But one I picked for you today is, would you rather slide down rainbows or jump on clouds?
Ooh, that's a fun one.
Right?
Okay. So let's think about this. Sliding down rainbows would be really fun because then you get that like little stomach flip, like a roller coaster, and you're in all those colors. But jumping on clouds, I think I've always wanted to jump on clouds. My dad's a pilot. He was a pilot. He's retired now. And I've spent so much time in the air traveling and looking out the window and imagining myself like in the clouds, like bouncing around in the clouds, laying down in the clouds. I think I would go with that. I've spent a lot of time in my head doing that. So I think that's probably the right answer for me.
That's great. Oh my gosh. I love it. It's such an intuitive process when picking these. You never know. And so often they just resonate with people.
It's such a fun game.
Yeah. Wouldn't that be fun to just like jump on a cloud and not have to worry? It's so funny because with the aging process, I hate to sound old, but it's kind of like I have a picture of me actually jumping on a trampoline. As a kid. So I was probably like the picture, I'm probably like 11 or 12. It's totally the awkward phase. And I'm like doing a split in the air
Oh,
But doing that as an adult, I immediately think, oh my God, I'm going to get hurt, which is
yeah.
so wrong. It's because
So
I
many
had it.
muscles being pulled. Yeah.
Because I had an injury like years ago, but it goes to prove it's still holding on to that, you know? So,
Yeah.
but it would be so fun. So jumping on a cloud just seems so effortless and just kind of like, I don't
No,
know,
and no injuries possible. Yeah.
very soft.
Yes. That is so nice.
Okay, so here we go. So, first question, how do you define creativity?
So creativity for me, and probably for a lot of people, is about expression. And that could come in so many different ways. So really, as humans, we're built to express ourselves. We're constantly creating, even though I don't think we consciously think of it in that way. And it really bumps me out when I tell people I'm an artist, and the first thing they say is, "Oh, I don't have a creative bone in my body. I can't even draw a stick figure." And I'm like,
Yes.
"No, what? Yet you are creative." So there's so many different ways you can use this expression that we've been given. Whether it's cooking or playing with your kid, like I have a really good friend who comes up with the coolest games for kids. She has two nieces and she just makes up these games. I mean, she's so creative. She does architecture and design work too. I have another friend who does like TikTok and reel videos with her daughter, like they dance. And my mom like loves to garden, and she has her house is like full of art. She curates like all the art that she loves, and the way that she's like decorated her house is so creative, but she doesn't consider herself creative. So I think everybody, whether it's writing or developing content on social media or the way that you show your loved ones you care about them, I mean, those are creative things. So I think it's just our basic human need for expression.
Yeah. So agree. Yeah,
Yeah.
isn't it the most yeah, 'cause both of us being visual artists, me being an art teacher, that whole thing immediately when you do your niceties of, "Well, what do you do? What do you do?" And then people immediately very defensively say, "Oh, just like you said, I don't have a creative bone." But then they say, "I can't draw
Yeah.
or paint." It's
I'm like,
always draw, it's always draw or paint. It's
right.
like
I don't like to draw. I draw blind contour self-portraits that look so quirky. And I don't like to draw. It's whatever you put your energy into. I mean, I guess I could practice doing that, but I'm like, I don't do that either. I don't paint realistically. I don't, there's so many other things you could be doing besides that.
which is why, so in starting I Am Creative, and this is the mission, that creativity goes beyond a pencil and a paintbrush and
Yeah.
truly empowering, and with what you're doing, empowering people, especially adults, kids as well, but especially adults, because we get so caught up in this hamster wheel of life and responsibility and shoulds and societal ideas of what's right and wrong and all of this stuff, that we really neglect what we actually enjoy, which and what our strengths are. And I love the things that you brought up, like creating content on social media and interior design and TikTok videos and making up games with kids, how you show your loved ones, your expression on how you show affection towards people that you care about. What's my daughter's always saying, "What's your love language? What's your love language?" And mine very much is, I guess, I don't know, I always get a little confused. I'm like, okay, so I mean, like, touch is very much like giving hugs and that kind of thing, and doing things for people. Like, it makes me happy, truly lights me up to like be able to do something for people that I care about.
Yeah, and I love your mission that you're doing with this podcast, and you're showing your love in that way. This is an act of service that you're doing for this whole community. It's beautiful.
Well, thank you. And
Yeah.
yeah, it's getting to talk to amazing people like you to be able to have these conversations, to be able to widen it, widen this whole definition. So, kind of on that note, your progression. So you started off in ceramics and painting, and then you became more three-dimensional. Even though you were three-dimensional with ceramics, but then you moved to fibers and took all of that even to more of like a sculpting level. Can you please, it's so exciting to me, because as I was kind of preparing before we got onto this podcast, your installations, I was like, oh my God, I need to do an installation. Because after speaking to you, I got so excited. Tell them about your, like the materials that you use and your concept. I love it.
Thank you. Okay. So I guess I'll start by saying as a painter, I used oil. I love oil. It's such a beautiful medium. And I haven't used it in many years, and I'd love to go back. But I was building up the canvas surface with texture, and I'd build it up. I'd sand areas down. I'd build it up again, really with the intention of touching my paintings. I can't touch anybody else's paintings. And so I was like, well, they're mine. I can touch these. So, because I'm so tactile and so touch focused. And so I was thinking about texture and building up layers and things like that. And then when I was towards the end of grad school, about to go through my 45-hour review, I really felt the pressure. I felt like I was in this like crunch mode, a crunch time mode of, okay, I really got to get this body of work together. And I stopped thinking and I just started doing. And I was sitting there one day peeling an orange, or about to eat an orange. And I was thinking about when I was studying abroad. SCAD has a campus in Lacoste, France, which is absolutely beautiful. And there's an old quarry there with old graffiti, like from the early 1900s. And on one of the walls, there was all these vessels like painted on the wall, like bowl shapes or boat shapes. And that really stuck with me. And I still think about that a lot. And coming from functional ceramics, the bowl shape is the most utilitarian form. There's so much metaphorical meaning there, like the vessel, the body, the container, the things that holds, other things. So I was thinking about that. So I'm peeling this orange, and I decided to peel the orange, like slice it with my fingernail along its equator. So I sliced it and I, carefully peeled away the two bowl shapes that came off. And, I'm thinking about ceramics and the metaphor and all that. And when I was younger, my mom used to make this potpourri around Christmas time. I don't know, your listeners might do the same thing, where you take a whole orange and you stick cloves into it, and then you let it dry and it sits there in a bowl with other potpourri. And as a child, I was like, wait, how is this happening? Like the orange hardens, it dries, it's not rotting. And so as I'm peeling this orange, like trying to turn my brain off, as I'm preparing for my review at SCAD, I was like, oh, I think that these peels will dry, and let's see what happens. Let me just try it and do it. I was also working with like being mindful and trying to be present, because we're so distracted. Even back then, that was in 2008. Even back then, before, I don't think Instagram even existed then, but Facebook did. And we were so disconnected. We were becoming disconnected, so connected that we were disconnected from ourselves and from our environment, our immediate environment. So I was really looking at the mind-body connection and how we connect to our environment. So it was an orange was something right in front of me. The act of peeling it gave my brain time to relax. I was in this like meditative state, and it was just this moment of beauty that I got to experience. And then, looking at these bowl forms. So I have these like dried orange bowls, and I was in this mixed media class with one of my favorite professors, Denise Carson, and also mentioned Kaio Easley, my other favorite professor in fibers, and Pam Wiley, also in fibers. These are brilliant artists. So, but Denise was teaching us how to use gold leaf during one of our classes. And I was like, oh, gold leaf is so beautiful. It's reflective. There's metaphorical meaning there too. And so I decided to gold leaf the inside of the orange peel. And I couldn't stop doing it. I couldn't eat an orange without peeling it in that way and without applying the gold leaf on the inside. And so that became, it became this habit, this ritual that I do. I mean, even now, you know, this is over, you know, 12 years later, I have plastic tubs full of orange peel. So, but I waited a long time. I waited years before I did an actual installation with them because I wanted to make sure that they would hold their integrity and they wouldn't disintegrate. And, even though I was fascinated by like entropy and disintegration, I was like, no, if I'm going to install this somewhere, I need to make sure that it's not going to like crumble off the wall. So I had, you know, I've had some of these peels the whole time. Some of them are very old because they were hanging in my house. And I started posting it on Instagram and Facebook, and a designer saw it. Well, first, a jewelry store in Nashville had me come and do their wall, and then a designer saw it. I've done some in private homes. So it's orange peels nailed to the wall. Oranges, pomelo. Pomelo are big, big citrus fruit. So those are the largest peels I use. Grapefruit, lemons, manolos, navels, blood oranges, clementines. Like I use any kind of citrus peel that I can. And so it's all the different shapes and sizes. And then I use, I don't know, something that you know, during my discussion with the client, I get inspired, you know, by something they say. So I let that inform the shape of the installation and how that will take shape. And I do a pre-plan, and then I just let my intuition guide me to where, you know, I get the basic structure down, and then the rest I kind of let my intuition guide me of where the rest need to go. So yeah, orange peels is some of the mediums I use, and I love those. But I also love to use rust and earth pigment, garlic cloves, silk, and you know, all kinds of things that I can get my hands on.
So the first question with the orange peels, is there any kind of is there any smell or no?
Yes. Yeah, it does. My studio does smell like orange peels. It's not like a fresh orange, but it does have a nice scent. So that there is a sensory experience there. When it's on the wall in someone's space, no, you can't really distinguish a smell. But in my studio, there's so many in here. And when I have them kind of locked in a tub, sometimes, you know, those little pantry moths, they really, yeah, they like them. So I have to keep mm-hmm. them locked out. But I have to be careful about that. But yeah, when I'm working on them, there is a smell in the studio.
So even after all these years, it still holds it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. That's so cool. What do you do with garlic cloves?
I was mainly using them for inspiration. And when you pop the clove out of its little shell, I was fascinated by that little shell. And then also after peeling garlic off the base, I was doing it really carefully to keep that fragile like husk paper intact. Mm-hmm. So I was saving all of these things too. And then the circular pattern on the base and the stem had such an interesting form and characteristic that I was saving those too in grad school. And I was doing work based off that as well. So the garlic, I use those as artifacts or objects like of beauty. So I have some of those around my house. But I have made garlic shells. Like when you pop the garlic out, I did these forms inspired by that, where I used silk tissue, silk organza, and a water soluble stabilizer. So in sewing, when you're using a really delicate fabric like silk or like a gauzy material or something, you can use a stabilizer to allow it to pass through the sewing machine. So it's kind of, it feels like plastic a little bit, but if it's water soluble, so I can rinse it out and then it'll disappear and it'll just leave the silk tissue and the silk organza. But I don't wash out completely because there's this stickiness to it, this kind of glue residue that I want to hold in there. So then I was using a hairdryer. I would sew the form, kind of assemble the form, rinse out the soluble stabilizer, and then use a hairdryer to blow it up.
Wow.
I haven't posted a lot about this, but I was making these at the same time I started the orange peels. And in my head, it is a giant cluster of all of these. You know, I have a couple trash bags full of these forms, but a giant cluster kind of hanging and maybe in a chandelier form with, you know, like lights on the inside of it because it's translucent. So that's something else I haven't really posted about or shown, but I definitely want to start doing that more.
Oh my gosh.
Get that out there.
So many things. First of all, I love what you brought up about connected and disconnected, that there's so much of that, like as we've mm-hmm. become so much more through social media and all of this, such an important topic to bring up. But I really want to just highlight to everybody this whole mind-body connection. Mm-hmm. And when you were saying that you were peeling the orange, how it allowed you to be in that meditative state. And ladies and gentlemen, it's this simple, and it's for me to hear it too. When we are doing these tasks that, you know, could be an everyday kind of thing, if you eat oranges or peeling garlic or whatever that is, these are spaces where you could just kind of take a moment and just really be in that space instead of thinking 10 steps ahead of what you need to do.
Mm-hmm. So and important.
I think that's just such a beautiful point. It's simple, but it's not mm-hmm. because we're so go, go, go. But those simple moments are because you got downloads as you were peeling the orange. It started, you were so relaxed. It started downloading and bringing up all these other ideas.
Yes. It gives you freedom. It gives you space. It allows your brain to wander a little bit. We need those moments. It's crucial. You're right. It's simple, but it's crucial. It's really important.
And also the idea of the imagination, totally relate. And people, I'm sure, you don't have to be a visual artist to do this, but it's very, you know, we get ideas and it's like we see them in our mind's eye. And whether for you that's around the business table and, you know, a concept that you have, or whether you're a scientist, or you kind of see it, or you feel it, or you smell it, or whatever it is. And then you know it needs to be born. You don't always know how it's going to be done. But it's that birthing process, like you're saying with the garlic husk, like all of this whole process that you have of using these other materials, but inspired by the garlic. And the end product, in this sense, there is an end product that you foresee because of the translucency and everything of them being lamps. Like, I cannot wait to see them.
Thank you. Well, and you're right. And that's a powerful point in manifesting too. It's the knowing or the belief that it can happen, but not needing to know how. So and that's kind of how I got to where I am right now too. I can see it. I don't know how. I don't really need to know how. That's the universe's job. That will work it out for me. But allowing these things to happen and staying present and mindful and noticing is really key in that process too.
But tell us a little bit about that journey of that. Like, did this always come easy to you?
It did, but only because my mom really taught this to me, and she didn't teach it to me in like a manifesting way. I grew up Catholic. I don't consider myself Catholic anymore, but I grew up Catholic. She was Catholic. She went to, you know, Catholic school. And, so she had a really wonderful connection with God and religion. And so she taught me, you know, and people have a strong reaction to the word God. To me, it means like the energy and the power of the universe, or my higher power or spirit, or there's a lot of different names you can call it. But she really taught me from a young age, like, give it up to God and he will work it out for you. So I struggled with the religious aspect of that, especially in my mid-20s. And I tried to figure out what that meant for me and So for a long time, I called it the energy of the universe. But so from a young age, I practiced that, like giving my worries or my desires or whatever it was over to the care of God, and he will work it out for me. And she would use examples of how it worked in her life. So I had a belief, I had concrete examples, I could see it happen, things had happened to me. So it was really expansive. I knew that it could happen. And I trusted that it would happen. And she had such a powerful trust in it that that really influenced me a lot. I'm really grateful to have had that and for her to share that experience with me, because it really has made a huge impact in my life. And it's where I got to where I was going. And it allowed all kinds of things to show up in my life.
Yeah. Yeah. Great words, belief, trust, and concrete. Mm-hmm. Because many people will hear this kind of stuff and be like, well, show it to me.
Right. You have to see it to believe it. And so those expansive things, so I even look to people who, if things that I want has happened to them, and that helps me believe that it can happen to me too. Just like my mom's examples, like I saw these things happen to her. I mean, she would use simple examples too, or big examples. I mean, one, you know, there was one time my parents were divorced. She didn't know, you know, how she was going to make this next payment, and she needed a certain amount of money. And all of a sudden she got a check in the mail for the amount she needed, because it was something with her insurance, and she got this rebate or something like random happened, and she got exactly what she needed. Mm-hmm. So it's like a little example, but it's really powerful when things like that show up. And you're like, oh, I am supported. Like if yeah. I put it out there and I trust, because she really did. She trusted, she believed, and things have always worked out for her. And they really have worked out for me too, even when they don't look like they are. I've definitely had a lot of disappointment and a lot of struggle, but I can see that it's working out for me in my favor, even though sometimes it doesn't feel like that.
Yeah.
So that's another. Yeah. Side to it.
And no, I think it's a great point, because it's a process. It's just a zigzag. We don't get from point A to Z in a straight line. There's a lot of curves. There's a lot of ditches. There's a lot of, but that truly holding the belief and the trust is, yeah, it's key. Because, and if you have this vision in your head, and then you're like, I want, I'm just saying, $10,000 a month. And then you're like, no, maybe 5,000 is really a better number. I think I'll do 5,000. No, how about in the middle? Maybe I'll do 8,000. The universe is like, what are you asking for?
Yeah. Exactly. And if you say 10,000, but you don't actually really believe that you can get that, then it won't come through for you. You've got to believe it too. So I could be like, I want $1 million. Well, for me right now, that doesn't feel true. It doesn't feel like that will come through. I mean, eventually, yes, maybe mm-hmm. will. But in the moment, I'm like, I'm not going to make $1 million next month. Like, how would that even? So you have to believe it. Mm-hmm. Ask for outlandish things, Well and Wander, what I'm doing with my best friend Jenna, is that was something that it was very outlandish. I didn't know how I could do it. I didn't know how it would work out, but I really could see it. And I could see being of service to other people in this way. So I think there's a key there too. It's the belief, it's being in gratitude, and it's being of service. How can I be of service to others? And in using my gifts, this is how I could do that. And it took 6 or 7 years and of holding this vision, of talking about it with other people, of writing about it. I use automatic writing, morning pages. Have you read mm-hmm. The Artist's Way?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. So I actually haven't read the whole thing. I haven't gotten through the whole thing. But years ago, I read it or part of it. And I started the practice of morning pages. So I've been doing that for, I guess, the past 4 or 5 years now. And there's, you know, periods of time where I might kind of lapse in it. I'm in one of those periods now. Like, it's not perfect every day, but I use morning pages to write out my vision and act as if I already had it. And Yeah, so that coming through has been wild. The past year was the unfolding of all of these things was pretty incredible.
Yeah, so I'm so truly happy for you that you have this. And I think it's, I just want to say before we go on to the second question, when you have these visions, I just want to just kind of stress, it seems obvious, but don't share them with people who aren't going to support.
Yeah.
Because you don't want to be so excited about something and then have somebody be like, seriously, well, how are you really going to do that? Like, you don't need to share that energy with people because then it just makes you question yourself.
That's such a good point. Yeah, and the energy around it, that's such a good point. Because you've got to vibrate on that high frequency if you want to attract the things you want. And if the people are bringing you down, it's just going to lower the frequency. Yeah,
Yeah.
that's a good point, Hollis,
It
definitely.
totally lowers it. I mean, I have a vision for a creativity center for underserved kids and adults in this beautiful space. And I've gone to visit the space. Like, it's still on the market, and it's like I envision it and I talk about it, and I've just like I take videos of it, and my daughter had her first driving lesson there. It's kind of like
Oh, cool.
I act
It's
as if
yours. Yeah.
this space is mine. And
It's yours.
my daughter would get so annoyed at me because she'd have her orthos up there. And then we would, when she was done her appointment, we would go and drive over to the space, and we'd grab a little something to eat and just kind of walk around in the space and sit there. And I'd look at her and say, this space is mine, isn't it? She's like, oh my gosh, how many times do I have to tell you? Yes, it is. I'm like, don't yell at me. I need confirmation to make sure, because it just feels like it is. And I want to know that
Yeah.
I'm not crazy.
Oh my gosh, you're not crazy. That is yours. And do you do morning pages?
You
Is
know
that
what?
part of
I
your thing?
waver on it too.
Yeah.
I do right now. I kind of kick back up into doing it again. And it does. It's things flow out that because it's just that consistent writing, even if it's just like, oh my God, I'm so tired. Oh, what the hell am I writing
Yes.
about?
Yeah,
And
I
then something flows out and you're like, oh my gosh, that was brilliant. Where'd that come
Yeah.
from? It's like my higher self.
Yeah. And even writing about the center and what you're going to do with it, or really, I like to do something that I think is called scripting. Somebody told me once that it's called scripting, but I didn't
Okay.
know what I was doing, but this is what I was doing. And I've heard it before, from other people, other speakers, but you write about it as if you already have it. So you could use morning pages for that. That's what I did with Well and Wander. I wrote about it as if I had it. Like, I am so excited that these women are on my retreats and I'm being of service to them and they're enjoying it and this is what we do and this is how they feel and how they react and this is how much money I'm making and I'm so grateful that I have this and I get to do it. So it's writing about it as if you already have it. Instead of as if you want it, but it's vibrating on that frequency that you already have it. And
Yeah.
then the universe aligns with that and it has no choice but to deliver it to you. So that's a pretty powerful,
Yeah.
like quantum theory kind of thing.
Yep. Yep. So there we go, ladies and gentlemen. Script it out, right
Script it
as
out.
if.
Yes.
Whatever it is, and it's not silly. It's yours. So
Yeah.
whatever it is, it's yours. And just do it. Stop questioning ourselves.
Right. We
It's
get in
just
our own way. I always get in my own way. I mean, even though I have these practices and I have this proof that things have happened for me, I still, react to fear and limiting beliefs, and I constantly have to work through that. I mean, those are real things too, but
Of course, we're
yeah.
human because we're
Yeah.
human, but we have these tools in order to be able to have, be aware enough to be like, okay, enough of that.
Yeah.
it's having the toolbox. So let's move on to the second question, which we've talked about some things, but dive a little bit deeper into how you incorporate more creativity into your own life.
Yeah, I think so kind of what we've talked about, I think, is co-creating with the universe. So I think that is a big part of my creativity, of my creation. And all the manifesting and all of that, I'm co-creating with the universe. I use daily practices as well. That's a big part of how I use creativity in my life. So about 4.5 years ago, I guess it was, I had been out of the studio for a few years. I'd been working in the corporate world. I'd been traveling before that. So my studio practice really fell off and I wasn't really making anything anymore. For a while I was still like knitting or doing something here and there, you know, making small little paintings. But for years, I really didn't do anything in my studio and I started not to feel like myself. You get that like weird irritation, agitation kind of feeling when you haven't mm-hmm. made anything in a while. You know, I'm sure you know what I'm
yes,
talking about.
Yes.
And so I was like, okay, I need to do something. And my professor, Kiowa, had us do a daily practice in one of our classes at SCAD. And so I was like, okay, I need to go back to what I know. And I need to go back to what I know has worked for me in the past. So I started a daily practice and I was sitting there. It was New Year's Eve, whatever 4 years ago was, I guess that was what, 2017, 2018, the artist mind, not
I know, I count on my fingers, I'm like 18, 19, 20, 21.
Yeah, so maybe 17, right? And yeah. I had gotten sober for the first time a few months before that. Took me a couple of times. so this was in my first attempt. So I was on my couch by myself, New Year's Eve, sober. And I was like, I need to get back to feeling, you know, feeling more like myself again. I need to start a daily practice. And I was like, okay, what's the easiest thing I can do so that I know that I can maintain this? Like what's simple, what's easy, what's available. And I landed on, like, it just dropped into my consciousness. It was like, I always have a pen and I always have my face. So I started doing I started doing self-portraits and I was trying at first. Oh, I cringe when I look back, when I scroll back to my Instagram feed far enough. I don't like drawing. I definitely don't like representational drawing. But for some reason, I was like, I'll do like self-portraits. So I was trying to do these representational self-portraits. And so that's kind of how it started. And here and there, you know, some days I would be tired. So I decided to do a blind contour self-portrait. And I really liked those because they were quirky. It was quicker. It was something that I could do. I should also mention I had also had a traumatic head injury during a snowboarding accident right before the time I got sober. So this was about, I don't know, 6 or 8 months before I started to do this daily practice. So I didn't have a lot of energy. I was sleeping a lot. Mm-hmm. It really took it out of me and it took about 2 years for me for my brain to really come back online and to get my energy back. It took a really long process. So I was also battling that, like, so what's simple, what's easy, what can I reasonably manage with these limitations that I was experiencing? So I started to do a blind contour self-portrait and I kept doing it. I posted it. Nobody liked it on Instagram, but I kept doing it anyways. And every now and then I'd run into a friend and they're like, oh, I really like what you're doing. You know, it's really interesting. This self-portrait thing. I'm like, wait, what? This is a thing? People are no, it would get like 2 likes. I mean, it was so sad.
Isn't that funny? But it's just stalkers. People stalk. They don't necessarily say anything, but they look.
Yeah. And then I had a commission, SCAD commissioned me to do 20 portraits. So wow. They purchased those the next year. Like, so things started snowballing from there. And then within my daily practice, I was also doing morning pages. So I have been consistent with that for the past 4 years, except for the past couple of months, because we've been starting this new thing, which is really when I should have doubled down into doing it. But my meditation practice and my automatic writing practice have floundered a little bit. But those daily practices were part of, you know, what I did to have creativity in my life, you know, on a daily basis. And it's led to other things. And I started doing installations and I'm doing commissions still for people. And I'm trying to get back into working on bigger mixed media pieces and paintings. I was doing some plein air little sketches last year when I was up in Bar Harbor. Acadia is a beautiful place. So I'm planning to do some like maybe abstracted landscapes over the winter. So that's like what I'm currently doing or thinking about.
Can you tell people, please, like, so Well and Wander, so it's going to be a retreat space. Mm-hmm. It's mindfulness. It's mindfulness practices. Is it actual creation of visual arts, or what are you kind of thinking?
Yes. So it's wellness and adventure. Bar Harbor and Acadia National Park is such a great destination for people, and we can really reset when we're in nature. So that's a big thing too, really connecting with ourselves and nature and getting out and exploring, but having the mindfulness component, like talking about meditation, doing meditation, talking about manifestation, working on letting go of our limiting beliefs and the things that are holding us back. So combining these mindful practices with movement and writing and, you know, healthy eating and all of these things is what Jenna and I have found to be most beneficial to us and have created the biggest changes in us. So we want to help bring what we've experienced success with to other people and just show them what's possible and also give them a really fun vacation and a reset. You know, it goes back to this connected, disconnected thing. You know, we're always on our phones. We're pulled in so many different directions. We are stretching ourselves to the max, and let's kind of have a moment for ourselves and reset and learn some skills that we can take into our daily life that can help us feel relief.
How long will the retreats vary in length?
It'll vary between 3 and 5 days. And we're getting started with it. So, you know, things are always subject to change and we'll see what works and what people like. But the first one will be a shorter one. It'll be 2 nights and it's at the end of our season. So so Yellow House Inn is where the retreats will take place in Bar Harbor. And we're only open from end of May to end of October because the house isn't winterized. It gets cold up here. We have to flush the pipes. We have to do all of that, winterize the house. So the first retreat will be a full day and 2 nights, and we'll be doing meditation, movement, journaling, and hiking. And then, yes, there will be an art component too, where, you know, we'll take people out and we'll talk about plein air painting and really looking at things and seeing things in a different way, because seeing requires a different energy than looking, and it can really bring you into the present moment and allow you to experience your environment in a more powerful way. So we'll be doing some painting and practicing mindfulness in that way.
I love how you said looking and seeing. It's so true. Because when you're truly looking again, you're being, well, when you're really seeing, like really taking the time to see it, then you're present.
Right. We look at things all the time, but we don't register exactly what we're seeing. So when you slow down and really take the time to see it, it definitely requires a different type of energy, a more focused and intentional energy.
So funny. It just made me think, like, I go for walks with my husband and my son, and just around where we are, here we are, it's in the suburbs, but there's like a pathway that leads through our development. And I'll always be stopping and like looking at the birds or something. Yeah. Sometimes my son will just be like, I'll be, oh, cardinal. And he's like, I saw it, but I didn't want to say anything because I knew you would stop.
That's so funny. But yeah, you're always noticing things. I think as artists, we do that. We see things differently than
people do. It was like this little bit of annoyance. And then, like, oh my gosh.
Keep it going, Mom.
The lantern flies. It's like killing fields in some sections. I don't know if you're seeing them up there, but they're literally like the killing fields because we go through one section where we walk and there's like, I can't even count how many dead lantern flies there are.
Oh my gosh. I don't see that up here. I don't think.
Really? Yeah. Oh my gosh. I wonder if it's so lantern. Have you heard about the lantern flies?
No.
Oh my gosh. So they're like attaching to the trees and like killing them. They're like this. Yeah, they're horrible. but they look so pretty. They kind of like have these beautiful red and black and like white spotted wings.
I have heard of this. Oh my gosh.
They're so pretty, but they're so bad. So it's literally, it's kind of funny, actually, I find it. And I'm curious to the listeners, like, if you're seeing them too, if it's like all throughout the US or, so like, we'll be like, I was walking the other day and I saw one and I kind of immediately get Tourette's when I see it and I like start cursing. I'm like, fucker. You have to get them from a certain angle. There's an art to it, like from the front, because they move really fast. This is a whole long story to saying I killed it. And there was a bunch of people walking forward and they're like, yes, good job. I'm like, I know, right? It's very, it's a connecting activity.
That's so funny and so tragic and terrible. And yeah, and something so beautiful is causing so much destruction.
It really is. So many metaphors in that. But Yeah, I think it's, I like that, that whole seeing and looking. I think it's a very important component to bring up.
Yeah.
So thank you for that. So as we are getting to the top of the hour, let's kind of move on to the third and final question. Again, I want to thank the people that are here live. So grateful that you're here. So we kind of wrap it up and put a little bow on it. But so Sarah, why do you think creativity is important?
Oh, there's so many reasons. Going back to allowing us to express ourselves, I mean, to be who we truly are and to feel the freedom in that, it allows us to be present. You know, being creative, you really have to be in the moment and you have to connect to yourself, and connecting to yourself and the environment and to others is really, it's really key for living a healthy life. And if we're not living in those ways, you know, things can come up like depression, disease, anxiety. I mean, there's such a big list of things that happen to us when we're not in that state, we're not connected to others. So I think it's important for our well-being, physical, mental well-being, and to get it out there for other people to see. Other people need to see your work. They need to see what your hands make or what your ideas generate. It's really important to share your gifts and to share, you know, what it is that you do, because nobody can do it like you do it.
Yeah. Oh my God. Yes, yes, yes. Because I think it goes back to immediately I thought of, you know, you started doing these blind contour drawings, which for anybody that doesn't know, it's like the outline of the face and like small details. It's not really detail or, you know, the generalized, like, you know, a line for the eye and the mouth. It's not a lot of details. But you were doing these just because you needed to do them, posting them, not getting a lot of feedback. But at the same time, there was this kind of underground thing going on of people really watching it, but you were doing it for you. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's great to get validation and being seen in that, but you're expressing who you are and it's only, you're only you.
True. No, yes. Yeah.
Nobody else so like important. You. So important. So please tell people how they can find you.
I am on Instagram as SarahBumgardner_art. I'm on Instagram at Well and Wander as well. So you can find our retreats there. And that's Well_and_wander. So you can find my art there. My website, SarahBumgardner.com. It's not super updated, which is on my list of things to do. But you can find me there too. And on Facebook as Sarah Baumgartner.
Beautiful. So before we say goodbye, give us some final words of wisdom.
Ooh. Be yourself. And like I said, nobody can make the things you make and nobody can do the things you do. So put it out there in the world. And let go of the limiting beliefs that are holding you back. Recognize the stories that you tell yourself that keep you stuck or held back, and like label them as stories and just go for it anyways. The world needs to see what you're doing and be creative.
Thank you.
Show us what you got. Yeah.
Show us what you got. Yeah. Oh my gosh, Sarah, it was so wonderful spending this hour with you. Thank you so much for taking the time.
Thank you so much for having me. This was so much fun, and I love connecting with you. Thank you.
Thank you. Same here. And to the listeners here live, again, we really appreciate you. Everybody catching the replay, thank you, thank you, thank you. This place, this space is all about connecting, inspiring, and sharing stories. So please like, follow, and share. We have always needed this, but we especially need it in these times to lift each other up and connect and just feel good. Also tune in for my publishing company, Express Yourself Publishing. First multi-author book, Creativity Is Whatever You Want It To Be, is going to be launched and released into the world Friday, September 17th. So more details coming out about that. So please reach out and you can be in the know with that, or go to Facebook at I Am Creative Philly. And it's so exciting. Stories are being shared because it goes beyond a pencil and a paintbrush. So everybody has the ability to express. You just have to own it. So I wish you a good morning, a good afternoon, a good evening, wherever you are in this world. And we'll be talking to you soon. Goodbye, everybody. Feeling inspired? There are so many ways to do things for you, to get yourself moving, to get your creative juices flowing, and to have fun. Check out I Am Creative and Express Yourself Publishing. Go to iamcreativephilly.com, iamcreativephilly, PHILLY.com, and check out the experiential kits. Check out Creative Shway, which is all about creative inspiration and guidance. And for Express Yourself Publishing, there's so many multi-author book opportunities. So I would love to chat with you so much. Everybody's creative. Everybody has a voice. Everybody has an expression. And I can't wait to meet you. Thank you so much for taking this hour to listen to our stories and share the energy. And I wish you a wonderful morning, afternoon, evening, wherever you are in this world. Bye, everybody.